Welcome to Randomania, a podcast where we select a WrestleMania match
at random
and then we talk about it. My name is Brad. Joining me this week, as always, is my brother Matt. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, good morning. Well, good afternoon now, I guess it would be. It's going well, man. Nice. It's finally in the 40s here, and there's snow melting. It's not negative 4 degrees. I saw all your snow is gone, so it's a good day to stay inside and record a podcast, I guess.
Yeah, we're getting like 4 inches of rain or something like that, so yes, it's an excellent day to stay inside and watch some old wrestling, and we had a great match this week. Well, we'll talk about it. We had a great match this week. What match do we have, Matt?
We had match number 136, which is from WrestleMania 13, March 23rd, 1997, from the Rosemont Horizon outside of Chicago, Illinois, in front of 18,197 fans. It's a submission match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hitman Hart, with a special guest referee whom we'll talk about.
That's right, a special referee, enforcer style. WrestleMania 13, Chicago area. What can you say about WrestleMania 13? It's a weird one, right? It's not like it's nobody's favorite WrestleMania, right?
I would say that's accurate. Nobody's favorite WrestleMania, but you're coming out of like that new generation era, and you're moving into the Attitude era. So we're like right here on the precipice. We're like, we're a little more edgy, you know, on this show than we were a year ago, but like we're not nearly as edgy as they're going to be in a year. But 13's good. It's got its quality matches.
Thankfully, the match we got this week, Stone Cold versus the Hitman, happens to probably be the best match on the card. I can't remember the card off the top of my head, but I can look it up. But, you know, I think it's probably, you know, was the most memorable match, at least from this Mania.
I'd say definitely the most memorable match. The main event was Sid and Undertaker, which I believe we've had for Randomania. That was for the title. There's like a 6-man street fight. There's The Rock has a match when he's Rocky Maivia. There is a weird heel versus heel tag team title match. There's a random Triple H match. You know, he was still Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So it's like cut to a year from now. Like it is off to the races, man. So, yeah, this is a good starting point to help, you know, figure out where we're going to be in a year, because shit changes after this match.
It sure does. Now, 1997, I've said for a long time, is my favorite year in wrestling. I think it's the only year you can think of. If you watch Raw from January 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2019, those two shows are going to be pretty similar. Like, you're going to be like the same show. Storylines will be different, but it'll all be the same thing. You go back and watch Raw from January 1st of 1997, and then go back and watch Raw at the end of the year 1997, and how much stuff had changed in just those 12 months in the business. For me, in my money, 1997 is my favorite year in wrestling. What about you?
I don't know if it's my favorite. I'm a big fan of 98, but I also like the 96 stuff, because, you know, we're in NWO era here with WCW, so WCW has set the wrestling world on fire again in 96, and that's really helped WWF now have to kind of jump more into the forefront and get a little more adult-oriented, where they used to be demoed to, like, the 2 to 16 crowd. Now we're looking for those 18 to 34s. So, I mean, this match is pretty evident of that. And then even again in a year from now, when you start getting, you know, bikinis and a lot of swearing and even more blood and just crazy stuff. But 97, good year. I don't know if that's my favorite, but I'd say it's a hell of a year.
I just think things started to ramp up a little in 98, and almost to its detriment, right? It got a little more bigger. I don't want to say bigger is not always better sometimes. I don't know. I just think of 98, I just think of like Val Venus all the time. And mm-hmm. I was like, and when I think of 97, I think of Bret Hart and Stone Cold. That's, you know, and then in 98 too, I think it's like, it's a good year. I could argue all day, but to me, like 97, I don't know, man, just the rise of Stone Cold, because that was when he was really in the Rock, you know, Rock's really finding his own character. The NWO hadn't split up into some bullshit Wolfpack at that point, so it's like, this original concept was still going. There's a lot going on in wrestling that I approve of at the time.
You might have sold me, because, you know, you're right, in 98 WWF, it's a lot of DX funny stuff, you know, it's Val Venus, like you said, it's Choppy Choppy or Pee Pee, it's the Oddities, it's, you know. You're right. I'll go with you. I don't know. Yeah, because 97 still has some of that, not to that extent, because DX does start later this year. You get a lot of the Austin stuff. Rock becomes The Rock in 97. So you're right. Like, Mankind is a thing. Dude, you know,
yeah.
it's a thing. And WCW is still pretty red hot, too, with the original NWO. Now they have 40,000 members in the NWO at this point. But I think, you know, it was still money, right? It's ratings. So, and yeah, it's pretty interesting to see how this match came about, too.
So, yeah, so one thing I noticed, this was kind of, okay, so let's talk about Stone Cold versus Bret Hart for a second. So, Stone Cold Steve Austin, first of all. Well, Bret the Hitman Hart, these two guys, two of the biggest stars WWF has ever had, especially in the 90s, right? This is like one and two, or one and three, whatever, however you want to put Undertaker, Shawn Michaels. It's hard to pick one, I guess, but Stone Cold is clearly number one. But, you know, Bret's probably, when it all said and done, maybe like fourth as far as dominant runs. Because, you know, being the star of the new generation is not exactly like, you know, you're on top, but like, when, you know? I don't know. Do you think that way?
A little bit. Like, I do consider Bret Hart being part of the face of the company, though, because from, like, 93 through now, like, when they have this match, I say now as in we're talking in 97, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels are the guys. Undertaker's there, but he doesn't, you know, other than, like, this Mania where he, spoiler alert, wins the title, like, it's Shawn Michaels and Bret. Like, this is the launching pad for Austin, and it fades out Bret, which we'll talk about, but they're like faces of the company. This is a transition of power. I always consider this match to be moving on from Bret Hart and moving into Steve Austin. And it's on purpose a little bit, but especially when you see how their trajectories go when the match is over. But I consider Bret Hart to be like the face of the company. The guy was champion for much of 94, for portions of 95, going into 96.
I mean, he was champ as far back as 90. Was it 92?
Yeah, September 92, I believe.
You beat Ric Flair or something?
Yep, beat Ric Flair in Canada.
In Saskatoon. I don't know, is that good?
Or Saskatchewan, sorry. Oh, I don't know. Flair was hurt. Hit him down.
I just said Saskatoon. Hit him down low in Saskatoon.
Yeah, it came from this match. Anyway. But, you know, for this match, how'd we get here? The nice thing is, this is like a long-standing feud. Like, this is what WrestleMania should be. It should be a combination of guys that have hated each other for a while, or you have really good storytelling, and this did. So, go all the way back to King of the Ring 96. Austin wins it, okay? Cuts his famous Austin 316 promo, and he's kind of off to the races at that point. It's really good. It's fantastic. But then after that, you know, he's starting to question, like, where's his competition? That's where he starts calling out Bret Hart. Well, Bret Hart has been gone since WrestleMania 12. Bret Hart lost to Shawn Michaels at 12, and we haven't seen him. There is storyline-wise speculation of his retirement and when he was going to come back and announce if he was still working for WWF, if he was going to retire. And then he does come back in late summer of 96 and accepts a match with Austin to have a match at Survivor Series 96, which is also fucking awesome. That's a great match. Have you seen that match?
I have. It's been a while. I was thinking about it as this match was starting because I remembered that was kind of the only thing I could think of that was prior to this was that I remember Stone Cold because when he said, I'm coming after everybody after King of the Ring, he's like, you're all on the list.
And that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to run through each and every one of them. One of my favorite parts of the Austin promos going into that Survivor Series match was, if you put the S in front of the word Hitman, you got my exact thoughts of him.
Very good.
Because that was a Survivor Series promo. It wasn't a WrestleMania promo. I was going to try to post it, but I couldn't find it. So, yeah, they had a match at Survivor Series. They kind of cooled down for a couple months, but then Royal Rumble 97 happens, which Austin wins. But cheating. He got eliminated, but the refs did not see it. Go ahead.
There's a big moment in that match where Austin was by himself in the ring for a little while, and it was one of my favorite Royal Rumble moments of all time. When he's throwing people out and he's checking his watch, he's sitting up on the apron, and then Bret Hart's music hits, and he puts his hands on top of his head like, oh shit, it's Bret Hart. And it's like, it's so great because everyone remembers it. They just had their match 2 months ago and all this, and their feud and stuff. So, and they come out and they're exchanging right hands, and it's very exciting and fun. And,
yeah, Jerry Lawler comes in the middle of them brawling, gets one shot, gets eliminated. Anyway, Yeah, remember that? And then he said, like, then he's on commentary later, like, I should have gotten in this metric, man. I'd have kicked everybody's butt. And he's like, what? It was great. Anyway, different
topic. That's not the one where he says, it takes a king. And then he gets eliminated and sits down and says, to know a king. And he acts like he was never in there the whole time.
Yep, it's that one. It's pretty great. It's pretty great. So Austin wins the Rumble in 97, but he actually got eliminated by Bret Hart in that match. But the refs did not see it because there was a brawl going on between two other guys. So Austin crawled back into the ring and threw out Bret Hart. Austin actually wins the match by cheating. So that leads to a match. He threw out
Bret Hart and he threw out Vader and The Undertaker. So they ended up going to In Your House Final Four, right?
Yes. If you remember that. Yes. I was in February. Yeah. And it was Vader, Sid.
Hart. Sid?
Yeah, it was Vader's. I think it was Sid. Cause I don't
it was
think
Taker.
It was Taker? Not
Sid. Sid was champ. Sid was champ.
Okay, he so Taker, Michaels. Vader, Hart, and Austin. And I think the winner of that match was supposed to be the number one contender for and get the shot at WrestleMania.
Right.
Okay.
Which apparently Taker probably wins. I don't remember. I haven't seen that. I may have never seen that, honestly.
You know, I'm not sure I ever have either. And it's obviously on the network. I might have to go and check that out.
Oh, we could just start random in your house.
Yeah. In your mania.
In your mania.
Mania house. House mania? I don't think. Well, we talked about doing Random Slam and Royal Mania or Rumble Mania. I don't know.
Random Royal?
Random
Rumble. Random Rumble. That's it.
Random Rumble. I thought Random Slam would have worked out still. You know what I mean? For SummerSlam. Yeah. Anyway.
Look out for that spinoff.
So here's the thing, though. That's a title match at the Final Four pay-per-view.
Is it?
Yeah, because Bret Hart wins the title at that show.
Holy shit! I don't remember. Yeah, 96. I don't remember, man. I don't. Yeah, something about this ringing a bell.
He does. Bret Hart wins the title because he loses it the next night on Raw to Sid.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused on how the timeline goes, and I apologize for not looking into it because I totally did look into it, but something's not clicking here because Bret Hart won the title at the Final Four pay per view and then lost it the next night on Raw after Austin interfered.
That's not when Shawn Michaels lost his smile, is it?
You know what? Shawn Michaels lost his smile.
Because wasn't it supposed to be originally Bret versus Shawn, the rematch at WrestleMania 13, and then they ended up switching it to Austin?
Yeah, because they had some kind of altercation, or Bret didn't want to go against Shawn, or it's all their shit backstage, right? It's all their weird backstage shit.
I believe, you know, this is something we should... No, I don't know. Maybe we don't know. Maybe nobody knows. Maybe this is...
Bret Hart definitely wins the title at the Final Four pay-per-view. Because he loses it the next night on Raw when Austin interferes and Sid beats Bret Hart the next night on Raw. Like, I legit looked that up. I saw that.
Okay.
Austin hit Bret Hart with a chair. Sid wins the title. And then that makes Austin versus Bret Hart a thing officially for Mania. Bret Hart does actually get a title match a few weeks later on Raw inside of a cage, which The Undertaker interferes in and helps Sid win so Taker can go against Sid at Mania, which then still parlays us into the Hitman and Stone Cold for Mania with more heat. And now Bret Hart's got the microphone, as we see in the pre-match package. He's swearing. He's all, this is bullshit. I'm getting screwed by everybody in the World Wrestling Federation. And he shoves Vince and he says bullshit like 3 times on TV.
Bret screwed Bret.
That's still work. Anyway, I don't really know how Shamrock gets involved. I know Shamrock had been... So Ken Shamrock is a special guest referee, by the way, coming from the Ultimate Fighting world. He had recently signed with the WWF, and I think they just wanted to have him at Mania to do something, so they threw him as the referee in this match. I could not find anywhere, like, a real reason why he was the referee for this match.
So my thinking is this, right? We've got Ken Shamrock. We need him involved in one of the big matches. We can put him in the Bret Hart match, but since it's Ken Shamrock, we better make it a submission match, which doesn't make any sense for Stone Cold.
Well, he used to do the Million Dollar Dream, though.
Yeah, but sure, it's been a year, and, like, he's been using the stunner, like, isn't that weird, though? I think the only reason it was a submission match was because Ken Shamrock was involved.
Maybe it was.
But it didn't turn out the way they planned, I think. It just turned into a real brawl, a street fight.
Yeah, pre-match package, they don't really talk about it. or anything. And I, when I looked on like the Wikipedias and the interwebs, I couldn't really find a legit reason. So maybe that's just as much of a reason as anything I could have came up with. So yeah, hell yeah. They do the pre-match package, by the way. Todd Pettengill, the voice of Todd Pettengill.
Todd Pettengill doing his best voiceover work that he could possibly do. They got better at hiring people to do that later, you know. I got a feeling their department was like six dudes and Todd Pettengill, so it was like, all right, Todd, do the voiceover for everything now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But it was a good package. It was very 97. It was very like, will he have it? What it takes to beat him, you know. It's,
and then what will happen if he can't? Yeah. But it was fine. We're at the match. You get your classic freaking WrestleMania theme, which is like the 90th of all 90s WrestleMania theme when they introduce Ken Shamrock, which I'm really hoping is what you're going to start this episode with.
Yeah, you have already heard that. It was that theme that opened the show. That was, believe it or not, I think they even held on to that for one more year after this, too, that super 1994 music. I can't remember if WrestleMania 14 has the same theme.
I hope not. So the match itself, well, Austin's, by the way, Ken Shamrock, jacked.
Yeah, he comes on the screen, he takes up my entire widescreen TV with his shoulders and arms, just blasting out of that shirt, as if the shirt is just, like, squeezing them.
Yeah, I wrote down his muscles are going to pop out of his skin.
Yeah.
He is thick! Yeah, this is really, I think, his first in-ring work, like he had done, like, an interview or something on Raw, but yeah, Shamrock would stick around for a couple of years and turned into a wrestler after this, so...
Sure, he's in the Intercontinental title match a year later.
Yeah, which we may have also had on Randomania.
We have. Go back and listen to that episode. I bet it's a good one.
Austin's out first between the two competitors, and you get the classic Austin 316 glass-like facade on the entryway, and that shatters as he walks through, which has been used in promos like ever since this, when they talk about Steve Austin.
So, they also had that same intro, that breaking glass for the Survivor Series match back in 96, which is fun. I remember that, because that was the first time I saw it. But, I remember hearing something about it. They actually had this glass that actually had, like, charges hooked up to it, and it literally just, like, and cracked the glass, and it exploded, and that's how it broke.
It's a pretty sweet graphic.
Yeah. Like, great.
Graphics not the right word. Pretty sweet visual. There we go. Yeah.
Pretty sweet visual. But yeah, it's one thing I did notice when his music fires up, it's just not the same as it is now. It's so quiet. I was like, oh, come on. I want to hear that as loud as possible.
It's like the quiet early version. It's a little more bassy. It's not super like pumped up and like heavy metal version of it. It's like, it's definitely like the very first in iteration of Austin's music. Maybe we can hear it.
Yeah, you can hear how it has a little bit less in there. It's like bam, 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 bam.
And the little bass. Sorry. All right. Bret Hart out next, looking oh so jacked too, man. Bret Hart's looking like he's been taking a couple shots in the ass. Oh, steroids, sorry. Not steroids. I don't want to say anything. Yeah, but he still looked good, man. He's looking real greasy.
Looks like he had a few sunny days.
Woohoo, baby. He was not happy with that.
No, he was not. And it also wasn't true, which was, that's what kind of makes it like a little less like of a burn, because he was just being a dick.
Yeah, because you know who the one that was having actual sunny days?
Himself.
Bingo. Shawn fucking Michaels. So they get out there and they're right into it, man. Austin into a leg, you know, double leg takedown, and they are and off to the races.
I loved at the beginning of the match, they have the camera over Austin's shoulder and he does the sideways look and then charges at him and takes him down. I think they've used that in promos a lot too, because for some reason, that was when I saw him standing there with that over-the-shoulder camera. I was like, oh, yeah, fuck, I remember that so good.
And you know exactly what's coming next. You're like, oh, he's looking away, looking at the crowd, and you're like, oh, I remember this. He's going to tackle him now. And sure shit, there it is, double-leg takedown. And they are right at it, man. They're fighting. They're immediately outside the ring. They're into the barricade, crouched onto the barricade, and into the crowd.
Clothesline into the Hall of Famers.
Did you see who was there?
I saw Tony Atlas and Captain Lou Albano for sure.
Those are the only two that I saw. But there were more earlier. Rocky Johnson had been sitting there too, but wink, spoiler, he may have gotten involved in a match earlier in the card. Just saying. I'm not sure if he was actually sitting there. Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure this is the Mania where Rocky Johnson gets into it with the Iron Sheik after the Sultan Rocky Maivia match.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty sure. So he might not have been sitting there, but I'm pretty sure he got involved.
Is that a legit story? Like, he got, like, into it, or did they,
no,
like...
after the match in the ring.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. After the match in the ring, like, it was part of the story.
I was going to say, how do I not know that? I should know that story.
Sheik was with Sultan. Sultan get the Intercontinental title match against Rocky, and anyway, yeah.
So Rocky. I was like, is this going to be on Young Rock?
It might be. Don't talk about that show. I haven't watched it yet, but...
God damn. Me either.
I will. Actually, I will watch it at some point, because I'm a wrestling fan, so I have to see it, but I just, you know... I hate broadcast and fucking network television. Anyway, they are...
As do I.
I know. They are, so, yeah, they're in the crowd right away, and they are swarmed by the audience, and there ain't a whole lot of help from security, other than Ken Shamrock just trying to throw dudes around the best he can.
Yeah, I said, look at this, Ken Shamrock doing legit crowd control right here. I mean, he was honestly, like, pushing people back and making room. Yeah, he's, like, shoving arms, he's got that giant 36-inch, yeah, clearing people out of the way. I mean, you know, I'd move. If Ken Shamrock told me to move, I'm fucking moving.
Especially if he looks like this.
Yeah.
Even now. Probably even now. In 2021, if I was like, yep, yeah, yes, sir, Mr. Shamrock, whatever you need. But certainly back in 97, looking like this, like, yep, whatever, I just poop myself, so I have to leave. So, see you later.
He'd probably yell, get out of my way.
Fucking hate you for that. I hate you for that. I hate you for that. It's so shitty. Did you notice that they are using the boards for the hockey? Because there's hockey in the Rosemont Horizon. So they're a little into the boards action when they're out there fighting in the crowd.
No, I didn't, but that's good. Yeah. Stone Cold does get to a drink vendor and grab a drink, which apparently is a signature if you pay attention of Stone Cold matches. If he goes outside and he sees a drink and he's anywhere and he sees a drink, he takes a drink.
Yep, he takes a drink, which he did, and then of course used it as a weapon, threw it at Bret Hart for the deadly soda in the back of the head spot.
That's right.
But they're fighting out there for a long time. I think there's a body slam, and they finally work their way from the crowd, and you get a big spot into the steps, right? And then, yeah, am I missing anything?
Well, I just wanted to say about the fighting in the crowd part, I completely forgot that they even went in the crowd at all.
Ah.
And that there was a backdrop on the steps, too, that got a good pop, because you just see feet flip over, and it's pretty good. I like that.
And the
that.
Crowd's like, oh, so it must have been a thing, yeah. Yeah, maybe it wasn't a body slam I saw. Maybe it was like that. Instead, he was trying to do a pile driver or something on him. So, yeah.
That's what it was.
Probably. So, they finally get back to the ring. And now, like, it's still on, man. They do not let up. We got to throw into the steps. We get Austin flipping off Ken Shamrock. And, like, as he's falling to the ground, which I totally laughed my ass off when I saw it. I was like, yep, that's Austin.
That's why the people love him.
Because and they cheered it. And they cheered it. It was so good.
There's one spot. I know Brett was on him and punching him at one point. Oh, I think that was later. Never mind. And he's wailing on him. He was actually hitting him. I might have been in the hair. I can't remember where. I mean,
it could have been. Close. That happened a lot, honestly. It happened a bunch of times throughout the match. So it could have been here, too. I know there's a stunner on Bret Hart, which they didn't even have a name for it yet.
No, they did.
But they didn't call it during the match.
They did, though. They had to.
Nope. They do not call it.
Well, it was, because he had the stunner at fucking King of the Ring last year before
that.
Did
they call
it
the stunner? Well, either way, during this match, we have Jerry Lawler, Vince McMahon, and Jim Ross calling the match, and they don't call it a stunner here in the commentary during the match. So that's why, in my mind, I was like, oh, maybe they haven't even named it yet. But you're right. He did use it to beat Jake Roberts in 96 after King of the Ring. So... Yeah, good call.
You sit there, you thump your Bible, and you say your prayers, and it didn't get you anywhere. You talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
You can't say that. What? That was my Doc Hendricks impersonation where he pulls a microphone away. Like, we can't say that.
At one point, he looks at someone and says, shut up, and it always makes me laugh every time.
Shut up. Classic. I mean, I want to find that. I should post that promo. It's so good. Anyway.
I listen to it regularly. I listen to the Austin 3:16 promo probably quarterly just because it's, I don't know, it just makes me smile every single time I hear it.
We get the figure four around the ring post, and I was trying to remember if this is the first time that Bret Hart has ever given somebody the finger four, which is also a different move than the figure four on the ring post. Finger four is something you see in a completely different video.
That's right. Finger four is in those videos that are behind the curtain. The figure four on the post, I'm pretty sure he'd done it before, you know what I mean? But, like, because they seemed kind of surprised, but, like, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it's the first time or not. I just don't remember an event before this that I could say, yep, he definitely did it at that, where in this match, like, I know he did it. And it became a pretty heavy staple of heel Bret Hart, you know, moving into here and with WCW. So he even did it against Goldberg at, like, Starrcade 99. So, like, it's been a thing that's his. But I was wondering if this was the first time he did it. The chair gets involved, and Hitman brings it into the ring, and, like, he's going to do, like, the chair on the ankle spot where he jumps down, like Austin had done to Pillman, as they referenced, and they've done a few times in recent history as well, but Austin just gets up and waylays the shit out of Bret Hart. Once, when he's on the rope, not too bad, but he hits him hard enough, but then when Bret Hart's in the ring with his back up, and he hits him in the back, he winds up where the back of that chair hits Austin's own heels before he comes back and swings it around to hit Bret Hart. Like, holy shit.
It was a full-on, full-blown blast to the spine with one of those old-ass blue chairs.
Yep.
I guarantee you that hurt like hell.
Oh, I had to. It's like a shotgun going off, man. He swung so hard. Like, ouch. Good for you guys on beating the shit out of each other, because you're really making this shit look legit, and I appreciate it. Austin puts some kind of weird submission hold on Bret Hart, which is like his only attempt at a submission through the whole match, really, that I think of. But what is that?
Right. It's the moment when you go, oh yeah, this is a submission match.
Exactly.
But you're like, okay, it's weird to see him have a fun submission hold on, one that, like, was pretty unusual even for then, because, like, you'd see, then he throws a nice common Boston crab on him afterwards, but the
good point. Yeah,
I bet you we could find out somewhere who taught him that hold that he put on,
or if he just did it and made it up on the spot. I don't know, because he just, like, grabs him and then just pulls on him, and I'm like, well, yep, that's, I guess, technically a submission hold. That's pretty good.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I think, was it in this spot or was it somewhere else where there's a rope break?
It was the Boston Crab.
And I'm like, hang on a second. How is there,
a rope break?
When he's beating the shit out of him with a chair. Yeah, this is the first time that Shamrock had to do anything.
Yeah, right? And, like, Vince is like, oh, I guess this is legal. So the rope break, who gives a shit? I wrote the same thing down. Why a rope break? It was at this point. By the way, we get a shot of Stu Hart, Bret Hart's dad, in the crowd during this point, too. And Jerry Lawler being Jerry Lawler. Even Stu woke up for this one. What a dick. What a dick.
Oh, and they show Bret's daughter, though, at the one point, and fucking Jerry Lawler says, no, they told her to cover her face up because she was so ugly or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, like, come Jerry. On, Jerry Lawler.
Oh, Jerry. But if you think about it, man, this is like 4 years worth of him just killing Bret Hart and his family.
Just give it to the
hearts. That started in 93. Because that was like a SummerSlam 93 match or something like that. And, like, they've been doing it. Like, or maybe it's a King of the Ring. Doesn't matter. But holy crap, man. It's like 4 years of just giving him shit. So it can't stop now. Like, you know, it doesn't make sense if you stop making fun of him. So they go to the outside of the ring again. And this is the part that I'm most fun and anxious to talk about. And this is where we get the whip into the barricade. And Steve Austin gets busted open. And now he is bleeding like a motherfucker.
Yeah, bleeding pretty instantaneously. He really appeared to smash his head on the guardrail. I know he didn't. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he did. You know, maybe he tried to. However, but either way, did a good job to look like. I hate to talk about wrestling that way, but, like, fucking hit his head pretty hard there, and bleeding out there out of his temple.
This is the part of the match that I know, like, a lot about without having to do research on it. So there's a no blood policy in the WWF at this time. There's no blood. You're not allowed to have blood. Sponsors don't like it. TV execs didn't want it. So I've heard this from Bret Hart interviews and in Austin interviews. Both of these guys, in case you didn't know, were on the Edge and Christian podcast, and they did an Anatomy of a Match where both Austin and Hart were talking about the match with Edge and Christian and watching it live. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
No, but I will soon.
It's very cool. Plus, there's the audio track that you talked about last week where you can hear Austin doing commentary over the match as he's watching it as well. So there's no blood. They're not supposed to be bleeding. Like, this is not something that's, like, technically quote-unquote approved by Vince, but Brett, in his infinite wisdom and knows what will work, suggests, like, how is he supposed to pass out in the sharpshooter, spoiler, if he's not bleeding? Like, blood would make it seem more legit because he's lost blood. Austin doesn't want to do it. Still pretty new in the company. Doesn't want to get heat. Bret Hart's like, I'll take the heat. I'll even do it for you.
Yeah.
So when they get thrown out of the ring, you can see Bret Hart grab the blade. And he's got his hand in a fist because he's holding it. So when he whips him in and he's giving him the punches there along the barricade, the very last one is when he cuts him. So Bret Hart actually bladed for Steve Austin. Steve didn't cut himself. And I guess when he whips his head back, it gets blood all over Jerry Lawler's paperwork. Because you even hear Lawler say, they've got blood all over me. Like, man, that's true. It really did happen. So they did, as far as I know, they did not get in trouble for having blood because it worked in the context of the match. But from what Bret Hart and Steve Austin say, that it was not planned going into the match that he was going to bleed. They decided it on their own and did it on their own without a prior approval. So, but it works. Because could you imagine the end of this match without Austin bleeding?
I mean, yes, because I watch wrestling now every day, and this is the finish. That would be a finish they would do now, but it does make a lot more sense and put a lot more emphasis and put a lot more, you know, drama, you know, all that to it. If some of you feel as though someone is actually perilously bleeding out in the middle of the ring in the sharpshooter.
He's really bleeding, too. Like, it's pouring from his head.
Yeah, my daughter wasn't a huge fan of the blood part. My son seemed to handle it okay. We just kind of explained that, you know, this is what they did back then, and we relearned now this is, you know, not okay.
It's totally okay. I should bleed more. Bleeding is good. Anyway, pretty much all Hitman after the blood spot until the kind of the bitter end. Austin gets a little flurry comeback where you get that sweet front buckle bump. When Bret Hart hits the turnbuckle with his sternum, which is like a Calgary training staple, you know what I mean? All those Calgary guys do that. But there's a big suplex from Austin. But then Austin gets the extension cord like he's going to choke out Bret Hart and the what the hell, use the bell. Which is a WrestleMania 8 Bobby Heenan spot, remember?
That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah, because early in the match, when they first come back to the ring, he gets the bell. And that's when he decides on the chair instead, when he's going to break the ankle with the chair. That's why the bell ends up on the ring apron. Later, when he's hanging him by the extension cord, the bell happens to be right there, swings it over his head, and clocks Austin. He rung his bell.
So, yeah, the sharpshooter. That sharpshooter is on for 2 minutes, just short of 3 minutes.
Wow, it felt like an eternity.
Yeah, it does feel like forever. Go ahead.
No, it's just saying it felt long, but, you know, it's not. 3 minutes, I guess, is a long time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's Austin's fighting out of it, and he's just bleeding. The iconic blood running down his face, over his teeth, as he's fighting out of the sharpshooter, which was like the cover of the Stone Cold Said So VHS tape. Which was like an iconic image that they used for years and years and years and years. And even when they use it now, they'll just black and white it. But Austin, trying to fight out of that sharpshooter, eventually succumbs to it and passes out from the pain and blood loss. Ken Shamrock, Steve, if you do not answer, I will win the match. And then he rings the bell and Bret the Hitman Hart wins the submission match at 22 minutes and 5 seconds because Steve Austin cannot continue.
I guess he gave up.
As Bret Hart, or sorry, as JR would say, Austin passed out from the pain.
Yeah.
He said about 40 times, it seemed like. Couldn't continue. He passed out from the pain. Bret Hart does his little celebration. Austin has not moved. Shamrock's just kind of hanging on, hanging by. Austin, again, has not moved.
Yeah.
And
Vince McMahon. Can somebody please come out here and check on Stone Cold Steve Austin? Like, as if he's, like, telling the back, please, somebody get out here.
I like that, too. That was really good. We need Maddox out here. Then Bret Hart puts the boots to Stone Cold as he's passed out and unconscious and finally kind of coming around, and Ken Shamrock don't stand for that. Mm-mm. Ken Shamrock don't like that. So you get a waist lock on Bret, and he throws him, like, legit kind of flings him up through the air and drops him, which was really nice, by the way, because Shamrock can do that because he's jacked.
Jerk! Get out of my way!
So, yeah, Bret Hart putting the boots to the heel. The crowd is booing Bret Hart.
Yeah. As soon as that happens, when Shamrock takes him down and he goes to leave and he's standing on the apron and the whole place starts to boo him, they said, there you go. You've accomplished at least part of, for sure, you've accomplished turning, you got the crowd to boo Bret Hart.
Bingo. So, Austin fights his way up. Referee comes in. He stuns Mike Chioda, one of the referees, and
terribly
refuses any help. Yeah, really bad. That's more on Chioda than Austin.
Yeah,
even still, but he won't. He's refusing any help. So as he gets to the aisleway, he kind of looks to the crowd, and they are legit cheering, some people chanting his name. So going into the match, we didn't talk about this much because I think it's more appropriate to talk about here. Austin was still the defined heel going into the match, right? And Bret Hart was still the defined babyface on paper. However, they played into it a lot in that pre-match package that Bret Hart was kind of losing his mind, going crazy, getting angry with the swearing, doing a lot of heel shit. And they'd mentioned how Austin was getting cheered, how his fans show placards of admiration and shit like this. So there's a lot of Austin 316 signs. So this match was designed to turn Austin full babyface and turn Bret Hart full heel, and it fucking worked brilliantly.
Yep, absolutely. Bret Hart would go on to continue to the old crybaby angles of things, which I thought was great. I always thought Bret Hart's promos had a legitimacy to him. He thought he was terrible at promos, if you ask him. But I thought his promos, especially in this time, and he was really starting, it was starting to feel real.
And he was like legit mad when he talked, so you believed him.
Yeah, so this was at a time when there was, you know, we don't have the internet. We don't know what the fuck's going on in wrestling. We just know that we turn on Nitro and we see people that used to be on WWF over on WCW. So then you turn on WWF and you see more angry people that were angry at the company they work for. You know, you think, oh, are they going to go to WCW? And it's just kind of played this whole uncertainty angle of the time of, like, who's, what's real and what isn't, you know?
Exactly. So, little follow-up on what happened after this WrestleMania. A week later, not the next night on Raw, but the following week, Bret Hart reformed the Hart Foundation. So, the WrestleMania was on March 23rd. On March 31st, 1997, your birthday, your 14th birthday, right, math guy?
You got it.
14th birthday, the new incarnation of the Hart Foundation was formed with Bret Hart, Owen Hart, British Bulldog, Jim Neidhart, and Brian Pillman. And then that was a thing for the next, November. November. Austin and Bret Hart did continue to feud. Austin, they had a match at the next pay-per-view, and that was supposed to be a number one contender match. Austin won that by disqualification because the Hart Foundation interfered. Austin had a match with Undertaker at Cold Day in Hell in Your House. Lost that because of the Hart Foundation. Then Canadian Stampede, the big 5-on-5 Canadian Stampede pay-per-view, which if you've never seen, go out of your way and watch it. The crowd is maybe the best crowd you will ever see for a wrestling match ever. And that's somebody who, coming from somebody who thinks the crowd totally made some of these WrestleMania matches 5 stars, the crowd at that Canadian Stampede show, which by the way is all 5 Hart Foundation guys against Austin, Shamrock, LOD, and Goldust, it's in fucking same. But that match pretty much ended the Austin Bret Hart feud, by the way.
Okay, yeah.
And then Bret Hart left in November after the Montreal Screwjob. That's pretty infamous. So that pretty much ended their Bret Hart's run at WWF. And then Austin became the most richest man in the history of professional wrestling who's not named Vince McMahon.
Right. He had the proverbial rocket strapped to his ass at this point and was straight to the moon with him, and he didn't miss. Stone Cold Steve Austin will go down as one of the biggest and greatest draws in wrestling history.
I put him on the Mount Rushmore, on like the Mount Rushmore of WWF guys, WWE guys. He is one of the 4 guys.
Yeah. Hogan, Austin, there's too many. I can't do it.
I flip flop. If you talk about WWF only, I usually do Hogan. I usually do San Martino, Hogan, Austin, and Cena.
Okay.
Now, I don't put The Rock on there, and I probably could. But if you take Bruno's run for like that 15 years in the 60s into the 70s, I can't compare it with The Rock. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion for a whole different time. But one of my favorite things too, they cut back to for this WrestleMania match, they cut back to the announcers, they're talking a bit, and then they show the ring and there's just a pool of blood.
Yeah. And it looks like a map of the earth. different continents have shaped in his blood. And some of it's still pretty wet. It's a little bit surreal, I guess. I don't know. You don't think about it, like, 'cause it's, you know. I never thought about
pool of blood.
Yeah, man, fuck. Like, when I was 13, I was like, okay, pool of blood. And now I'm like 38, and I was like, Christ, just shit, this guy's bleeding all over the place.
That's why I'm like, it's not safe for the next guys to go in there. I don't want to put my foot in that. That's disgusting. I do want to mention
that the announcers... It was Wolfie D and JCI, still be okay.
Yeah, that was the next match. It was the Chicago Street Fight. That is true. The announcers did a fabulous job. So those that are like watching at home, they do a fantastic job of the pre-match, during the match, and post-match of kind of telling the narrative of where they're going to go with these two characters too. It's just it's perfectly written, I think, and well scripted and perfect, just perfectly executed on Now We Have Turned Them, and how you even how you had sympathy for Bret Hart and now you despise him. And how you had hatred for Austin, and now you have sympathy for him. Like, they've conveyed that just as much as anybody. So, it fucking was great. Let's rate this bitch.
Let's rate this bitch. So, on a scale of 1 to 5 HBKs, because Mr. WrestleMania is HBK, we're going to rate this thing. I'll go first this time, because I don't think I went first last time. It's the best match probably on the card. It's one of the most memorable WrestleMania matches of all time. It's two of the biggest stars, two of my favorite wrestlers of all time, two of the people that I legit had posters of growing up. So I guess I'm a little biased, but it's because it's indicative of that they were the biggest and best at the time. And they came together for one of the most iconic matches of all time. This is a 4.5 HBK match. 4.5 HBK, because it is a 5, because it's a submission match with two submission holds. I don't know. It shouldn't have been a submission match. I'm more on board if it was a street fight, but whatever. It doesn't take away from the fact that these two executed exactly what they were trying to do. It's near perfect. It's 4.5, almost 5.
It's weird because I really want to give it a 5. I really do. Like, initially, when we got it, I was like, sweet, a 5-star match we get to talk about. A 5 HBK match that we get to watch. But I think I have to go 4.5, too. I can't really justify not giving it a 5, other than the reasons you already specified. Like, having it not be, like, why not just make it a street fight? Or there's already a street fight on the card. Okay, why can't you have a Falls Count Anywhere match? I don't know. I don't really have any flaws in the match. Really? Nothing's wrong with it. It's kind of... fuck it. 5.
Okay.
It's 5. I can't find anything wrong with it that it can't be. The historical significance of the match, the competitors, even the announcing, even Shamrock. I think I got to give it a 5. There is a short list of WrestleMania matches I would recommend a new wrestling fan to watch, and this is on that list.
No, see, my problem with it is... It's a lot of brawling. It's a fight of passion. It's a
story, though, that gets it for me.
Right. Well, you had to have... I think it would be better if you just watched wrestling in 97 instead of, you know, this match isolated by itself. Compared to, you know, the TLC 2, you know, compared to Taker Michaels, compared to, Rock, Hogan, compared to... What did we have a couple weeks ago that we had a... Oh, Kofi and Bryan. I don't know. This is iconic for what it is, but
I like this match more than Kofi and Daniel Bryan, and I gave that 5.
Okay, whatever. Well, I guess that's glad we disagree. It makes it more interesting, but it's not. It just doesn't have it for me. It does.
I do agree a bit much that living in the moment and seeing this as it happened, being a fan of '97 helps because you know the context and you lived it for a 10-month, 9-month build up. And then knowing now the significance of the match and what happened afterwards, that's what really gets me to put it a 5, just based on how important the match is. That's why I go to 5.
Okay.
Without that, I could do 4, 4.5, but I got to do that.
Okay, yeah, I get it. I mean, like I said, it's two of the biggest stars.
Hey, we shouldn't always agree, man. We agree far too often. It's good to not agree on one.
That's right. I think it was a 2 HBK, man. I'm just kidding. You're
high. I'm never doing this match again.
That's fun. Wow, cool. Should we pick a match for next week?
Let's do it, yeah. We have 358 matches to choose from. I also select 0 as the minimum number. If we get 0, we can pick any match, WrestleMania match that we want, or segment, or whatever it is that we choose. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
235
is John Cena versus Shawn Michaels.
Really? Is that WrestleMania 23?
Yep, it is. 23, main event at 23.
Cool, main event at 23, Detroit. I know people that were at this show. You know people that were at this show.
Yeah, this is a big one, another big one.
This is the actual, I think, is it the actual main event of the show?
It is. Well, yeah, because the next match after, is JBL Finley. Also, we had on the show.
Cool. Well, hey, man, a title match, two massive stars.
Yeah. Let's see what they can do together.
There's some good build-up, and I know a little bit about this match as well.
I haven't seen it since, probably, I doubt it. This is, dark ages for me, so.
I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen a John Cena match I didn't really like, and I don't think I've seen a Shawn Michaels match I didn't really like, so I can only imagine that this was probably pretty good.
I vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
I remember a fan trying to get into the ring as the match was starting.
Ooh, fun. Let's talk about that. Let's get him on the show.
We'll find out who it is. He's in jail. He's probably dead. Yeah. He lived in Detroit. He OD'd on ICP music.
Yeah, that's it. All right, well, that's good. We can look forward to that next week. That's fun. Another John Cena match. We had our second one out of 6 of those. Odds are you're going
to
get...
That's okay. We got Mr. WrestleMania. We get to rate an HBK match on HBK scale, man.
Okay, well, that sounds good. I want to congratulate Bret the Hitman Hart on winning this match, though, for this week. Bret Hart, best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. Everyone in the goddamn back knows it. Congratulations on winning the match. Unfortunately, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
You're fired.